Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, June 3rd. In 50 days, Tokyo will host the delayed 2020 Summer Olympics and Paralympics. But the host country has only fully vaccinated about 2-3% of its population. Another hurdle for the beleaguered games, 10,000 out of the 80,000 unpaid volunteers have recently dropped out ahead of the July 23rd opening. Now, despite all of this, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is signaling that it is moving forward with games. They're signaling that today by unveiling the costumes, music, and the podiums that will be used for the ceremonies. And it's not just Japan and COVID in the Olympics controversy news right now. The IOC is also facing pushback for hosting its winter 2022 games in Beijing. A growing number of human rights groups are calling for a boycott of those games because of China's persecution of Uyghur Muslims. Joining me now to talk about all of this, all the way from Tokyo, is Stephen Wade, sports writer for the Associated Press. Stephen, I think it's the middle of the night out there, isn't it? So thank you very much for doing this.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
You reported on the 10,000 volunteers dropping out just this morning, or I guess afternoon. What are the former volunteers telling organizers?
They're afraid of COVID. They're not going to be vaccinated. None of the volunteers, 80,000, would be vaccinated unless they had contact with the athletes. Very few will. And so the athletes, the volunteers won't be vaccinated. And they're getting cold feet, like many people here in Tokyo, about these games.
And so you write, unpaid volunteers are a key workforce in running the Olympics and save organizers millions of dollars in salaries. What sort of work do these unpaid volunteers typically do? And why do they do it for free? Are there any perks, at least?
Well, in typical Olympics, they get a free uniform, they get fed on the days they work, and they get some transportation to the venue. They get no lodging. They do it because of the possibility of being close to people who are famous and powerful. One analyst told me last year, he thinks that the IOC could charge people to be volunteers, and they in fact would do it because people get a chance to see behind the scenes in this sort of mystical world of the Olympics, this mythical world of the Olympics. Mm. So they have plenty, they have no problem finding volunteers, but they're using unpaid labor and saving perhaps on these games, maybe $100 million.
Stephen, you're right, only about 2-3% of Japan's general population has been fully vaccinated in a very slow rollout that's just now speeding up. What about the athletes?
Japanese athletes began being vaccinated this week. They are going to be vaccinated. We don't know the athletes around the world, how many will be. The IOC is saying 80% of the athletes and the participants who are in the Olympic Village will be vaccinated. But we have no way of knowing that number. And I'm not sure how the IOC really knows that number either. But that's the number they're putting out there.
And there's no vaccination requirement. You can't go to a Knicks game right now. Well, you can't go to a Knicks game at all because they got eliminated last night. But it was going to be, you couldn't go to a Knicks game if they made round two unless you were vaccinated as a fan. What about the Olympic athletes?
No. The IOC has said from the start, this is voluntary. We can't force anybody to be vaccinated. They've organized these entire games on the premise that there would be no vaccination available. So their strategy is test when people come in the country, test when they get off the plane, put them in a bubble. The bubble would be safer if people are vaccinated, but we're not requiring it. And that's been their spiel. Although behind the scenes, the IOC has been encouraging very forcefully people to get vaccinated and has been getting vaccinations donated from Pfizer, I believe. I think Sinovac in China has donated to some countries. So they're trying to get athletes vaccinated without requiring them to be vaccinated.
Is it too off your sports beat to offer some analysis of why only 2-3% of Japan's general population has been fully vaccinated? You know, in this country, we're getting close to President Biden's goal of 70% of the population having at least one shot by the 4th of July. And a typical American might think, well, Japan is another wealthy industrial country. You would think the vaccination rates would be high.
You would, wouldn't you? But here's what's happened. Japan has only 13,000 deaths. U.S. had 600,000. So there's a level of complacency here, I think, among the Japanese. Although the virus is around, it was not as bad as Brazil or South Africa or the United States or Britain. So there's complacency. Also, Japan required that every vaccine, Pfizer, Moderna, whichever one, had to be go through the approval process in Japan. That slowed things down by 2 or 3 months. There's no vaccine being produced in Japan. That slowed the whole thing down. And then, despite the image of Japan being an extremely efficient country, which it is on some levels, it's also very, very bureaucratic. So the bureaucracy has slowed it down. And it's only in the last couple of weeks that they begin to get the ball rolling. And 2 or 3% fully vaccinated is a really low number. You can see that.
So will there be any spectators at the games? And will they have to be vaccinated?
No. Well, first of all, there's no spectators from abroad. That's been ruled out. We still don't know if there'll be any Japanese spectators. It's beginning to look more and more like these are going to be a games with no spectators at all. And that's because the International Olympic Committee gets about, derives a massive amount of income. 75% of its income comes from broadcast money. So what the IOC wants to do is put these games on television, stream it, whatever the modern device is now that will take it. That's the revenue source for the IOC. So getting the games on TV is much more important than fans. They don't care about the fans. I think they'll be happier if there are no fans. It'll make things much simpler and not complicate the problem of perhaps the virus being spread unbeknownst by a fan who stumbles into the volleyball arena.
And here's Amy in Manhattan calling in, who says she's the mom of a person on the 2021 team. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for being on the air these months. You've really kept us sane here at home. Yes, my daughter is on the 2020/21 team. She was on the 2012 team as well, and obviously it's a completely different experience. And your guest just explained part of my question, which we have not been able to get an answer even close to the Olympics, is why the Japanese, knowing that they were going to be inundated by people, didn't ramp up their vaccination rate. And I guess the explanation that he gave about the bureaucracy and not manufacturing is part of the answer, but it's very, very frustrating for us. Obviously, we're not going, which is sad. The games are very much curtailed for the participants. They're going in late. They're coming out within 48 hours. And everybody is worried. And the 80% figure from the IOC, as far as we can tell, is just a ballpark. He doesn't know that. Thomas Bach does not know that for a fact. So the whole thing is rather a debacle. And at this point, for them, for the athletes, it's very, very hard to train. You know, they're sort of in a news bubble to try to drown out all of this, since they have to behave as if they're going to be competing in 50 days.
Yeah. Stephen, what would you say to or ask Amy as the mom of one of the athletes?
Yeah, the athletes are on the wrong end of this deal. As she knows, probably the athletes also have to sign a waiver, which all athletes, Olympic athletes, do. But this waiver includes COVID measures. And if you come down here with COVID, the athletes will have to waive their right for any, whatever, legal action. There's also the problem of unfairness. We are going to have, of the Olympics and of the athletes in the games, 80% will get in through qualifying events. That's what the IOC says. The other 20%, since qualifying events had not been able to be held, will get in through ranking systems. Some sports have rankings, judo, wrestling, whatever. So you're going to wind up with athletes who didn't get a chance to qualify, who are going to be supplanted by athletes on a ranking system that's perhaps a year or two old. That's going to be incredibly unfair. So the athletes are on the brunt end of this, and I hate to say this, to be honest about it, but the athletes are pawns in this thing. Again, the IOC is a sports business operated out of Switzerland. 75% of the income comes from putting it on television. They need the athletes on the stage. They need them in the venue for volleyball, judo, wrestling to perform so that the television cameras can record it and the IOC can get its money from NBC, from NHK, from the broadcasters. NBC Universal is the largest single income source for the IOC. So they depend so much on television broadcast money, and that's why the games are going ahead. Today, a doctor who's on the panel for the government panel on COVID said in the legislature in a committee today, these are very abnormal circumstances for having Olympics. These Olympics should not go on, and asked the prime minister to explain why. And the prime minister said something like, well, it's for world peace. We're trying to show the world that we can beat this pandemic, blah, blah, blah. But the truthful answer is that the IOC needs the broadcast money, and that Japan has spent between $15 billion and $30 billion organizing these games. And Brian, as you mentioned, China has the Winter Olympics in 6 months. Japan does not want to fail putting these games on and then have China do it successfully in the Winter Games in 6 months after Tokyo closes. Mm. So there's a gigantic geopolitical element here that's in play. And face-saving is gigantic. Face-saving is gigantic.
Amy, do you want to shout out your daughter so our listeners can watch for her? Or do you want to protect her privacy?
Sure.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Her name is Nicole Ross. She's a foil fencer. And, you know, you were talking about them being pawns. Obviously, fencing is a niche sport, although the U.S. has really come on strong in the last 10 years, and we have had great results and world champions and Olympic medals before this. But it is tough, and it is tough to see the athletes really, really working so hard and obviously being pawns in it all.
Amy, good luck
to
you.
Anyway, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Good luck to you and your daughter. Masami in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Masami.
Hi. Hi, Brian.
So what would you like to add?
So I live in New York 10 years, and I'm from Tokyo, and I'm actually about to visit my family in July. Mm-hmm. But I feel very uncomfortable to visit there because Olympic is happening. Everything is open, and so many people are out, and people don't really care about people's like health and lives.
And so you're concerned about the people in Japan suffering a COVID outbreak in the country because athletes are coming from so many other places with higher COVID rates. Is that it?
Yes. I'm concerned about the athlete and their team are coming. Also, they're not shutting the city because they want to open all business for just like celebrating Olympics.
Mm-hmm. To make money. It's a business opportunity.
Exactly.
The big event coming to town. Do you think that there's, from what you hear from your friends and family back in Tokyo, is there backlash to even having the games?
People don't want Olympics to happen, but I think they're not really listening to people actually living there. They really want to like push to the Olympic. It's very soon. It's like end of July. And I think like it's getting closer and closer, and people are like, oh no, I think it's going to happen. But there's nothing we can do. And it's very frustrating.
Masami, thank you very much. And stay safe on your trip. Is it very divisive from your reporting there, Stephen?
Absolutely. She's right. She's spot on. 50% to 80% of Japanese, depending on how the question's phrased, oppose having the Olympics. There was a petition drive online here a couple weeks ago, 400,000 signatures in very few days. The opposition here is very strong, but as Masami probably knows, Japanese are not the sort of people to go out in the streets and protest, so you don't see that sort of opposition. But the Asahi Shimbun, the second largest paper in Japan, 5 million copies in the morning, came out a couple weeks ago saying the game should be canceled. The American Journal of Medicine, or the British Medical Journal, has said it should be called off. The New England Journal of Medicine has said it should be reconsidered. They called into question the IOC science in these playbooks, in their strategy they're using to fight COVID. So there is a tremendous amount of opposition here, but there's no fighting City Hall. Prime Minister Suga is bound and determined to have these games to save face for him. There are parliamentary elections here later in the year. He could get blown away if these games were suddenly called off or if they're a complete disaster. So it's in his interest for them to come off well, and I think he thinks his political fortunes would be better if they do. If they don't come off, or if they should be called off, which it seems impossible to think about being called off now. I think Dick Pound, the IOC member, said it would take Armageddon the other day to call them off. But would they be called off? How embarrassing would that be for the prime minister after all this money, all this effort, all this energy, not to be able to do it? Unthinkable, really.
If you can tell, how good is the quarantining system? Because we talked about a low vaccination rate. Then there's testing. And you reported that a member of Ghana's soccer team tested positive for COVID upon arrival in Tokyo and has been placed in quarantine. Jamaica's soccer players were not able to even go to Japan because of issues with testing. So what are you seeing as all these people arrive? How good is the testing system and then the quarantining system from what you could tell for those who test positive?
Yeah, I guess you can see it two ways. The system is working. They found the Ghanaian football player. They found the Jamaicans. They didn't get in the country, so it works. They're going to have, the numbers are astounding. 15,000 athletes are coming in here, Olympics and Paralympics. Tens of thousands, probably 100,000 people coming here, all being tested before they leave home. Two tests before you get on the plane from Madrid or London, wherever it is. Another test when you get on the ground. The athletes in our entourage tested almost every day in the athletes' village. But no matter how much the testing, somebody has to slip through the cracks. We know there are going to be positive tests. We know that the games are going to be disrupted continually, possibly by things like a positive test that turns out to be negative. An athlete who wanted to go into the wrestling final can't compete and then finds out the next day he or she wasn't positive but misses out on the game. So we're going to have all those sort of disruptions here. No matter how perfect the system is, there are going to be people going through the cracks. And I say this, there's no country in the world that would try this except Japan. I was in Brazil for 4 years for the 2016 games. Impossible. There's no country in the democratic sphere, save for authoritarian states, that could pull this off. Japan will probably come close to doing as well as anybody could. And probably when it's all over, people will praise Japan. Japan will be a hero, a model. But people are going to go, there are going to be problems of things falling through the cracks. That's inevitable. And so we know there's going to be problems and there could be spread of COVID. And a doctor last week said, you know, he's fearful that these variants will get in here and we'll have a super spreading event or we'll have an event in which a new variant pops up and is created. So, you know, it all looks pretty bleak.
Is there any precedent for countries or even individual athletes boycotting a set of games because of human rights violations by the host country?
I don't know. You're going to stump me on that one. I mean, I don't think so. We certainly had the boycotts in 1980 with the Moscow Olympics. We had the LA Olympics were boycotted. There may be one other one that was boycotted. I don't think.
Yeah.
I think this would be the first one since LA 84. And of course, as your caller, the last caller, with an athlete in the family, the athletes are the ones who get battered with this. Again, the IOC has put these athletes in an untenable position. What do you do? Do you go there and look the other way about the human rights violations and the genocide? Or do you stand up and speak out and then perhaps lose your sponsorship? And then the woman who called with a daughter in fencing, you know, they hardly have any money to get along with. So she probably can't afford to lose the one sponsor, two sponsors that she might have. So the IOC has put them in a very difficult position, and they've gotten in a bad habit of going to authoritarian states. They went to China in 2008, flush with money. They went to Sochi, Russia in the Winter Games in 2014. They're back in Beijing in 2022, basically because nobody else would take them. None of the European countries that are winter sports nuts like Sweden, Norway, Switzerland wanted the games. Many had referenda and voted no. And so the IOC was left with choosing between, get this, Beijing or Almaty, Kazakhstan. And Beijing won by 4 votes. So that's why the games are in Beijing. And I think the Chinese were shocked when they got the games this time.
So that's going to be a rising debate in the U.S., I guess, in the coming weeks and months. Pressure on the U.S. Olympic Committee not to go by human rights activists, and maybe pressure on the U.S. government and President Biden to take a stand on this, right?
Yeah, I think the USOC has already said they've already ruled out a boycott. I think last week they came out and said no boycott. That hurts the athletes. Mm-hmm. The State Department, I think Secretary Blinken, I think agreed that there was genocide going on, but I don't think the State Department at all has decided about a boycott. I think they've spoken out against it. But all it would take is a couple of athletes, a couple of star athletes not to come, or a country like Sweden or Norway, one of the strong winter countries, Canada, to drop out. And that would be a horrible signal for the Chinese. And then you would might see a domino effect. So we'll see if that happens.
And listeners, now you know you can be reading Stephen Wade, sports writer for the Associated Press. Thank you so much for staying up late, Tokyo time, and doing this with us.
Brian, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.